Save it for your memoirs, you pathetic witch.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 28, Ryan's Choice. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Yet another terrible episode title.
Oh, my Oof. God. I mean, the fact that Ryan gets top billing in the episode title, I mean, it's really still the B plot, but still it's like, oof.
Him? James Newton Howard? Come on.
Yes. What is his name for real?
Not that. I don't know. Is there a James?
No, there's a Hames. That's what's throwing you.
What's the middle one?
Vance? No, Hames.
John Hames Whitney?
No! No! It's John Hames Newton.
Oh.
So close. But this is why you think it's James Newton Howard, and so did I, because it should be. Anyway.
Yeah. James Newton Howard doesn't think so. He has Oscars. Not this
Great
guy.
Point. Anyway, we'll get to this motherfucker in a second. But first, we want to tell you what's happening. On our Patreon, episode 181 of Again With This, dropping February 23rd, let's read about Melrose Place in the February 21st, 1994 issue of People. That's right. On almost its 30th anniversary, we will be talking about a story called Hot Property! This is legible at people.com, and we'll link it in the show notes, but the version on the website does not have all of the pictures. So you will want to join our Patreon to see all of the visual aids, scans of every page that we discuss in this podcast episode on Fridays. So again, with this podcast.com/club to hear all about it. Sadly, now we have to get to our B plot. Ryan has scandalous secrets.
Who?
Ryan McBride.
Huh.
I'm as shocked as you are. After an establishing shot lets us know that Ryan's daughter, unfortunately named Sarah, is in a boarding school, not an orphanage. I mean, unfortunately for you, not her, in case that wasn't clear. We go inside and pick back up where we left off. Ryan sits on the edge of Sarah's bed and wakes her up. She didn't think that she would see Daddy until Easter, but he woke up this morning and decided he had to see her today. She launches right in with school gossip, and then Ryan tells her the news of a new friend he made named Megan, clip two.
Is she nice?
Oh, yeah, she's smart and funny.
I bet Sister Louise wouldn't like her.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. She does have some bad habits. Although I can't think of any right now. But I was thinking maybe the three of us could spend some time together for vacation.
No, vacation's our time, Daddy. Anyway, I don't know why we're talking about Megan so much. It's not like you're serious about her.
Well, a little serious.
But not married serious. That's our deal, right?
You shouldn't be here.
I just came by to say hello.
Well, fine. You've said it. Now, Sarah needs her sleep. She's got class early tomorrow.
Please, Aunt Terry, can't he stay just a little while?
No, sweetie. That's not a good idea, okay?
Aunt Terry's right, honey. I should go. I just stopped by to say hello because I love you so much. Even if it is against the rules.
Rules are for a reason, Ryan.
Okay, I'm gonna go. I'll see you tomorrow if Aunt Terry lets me. If not, spring break for sure. We'll spend the whole week together.
Alone?
Just the two of us, I promise.
I love you, Daddy.
Ew. That's not our deal, right? Like, no, our deal is you're the kid and
right.
You do what I say. Shut up. Sorry. This whole storyline, I just resent having to care about it at all.
Mm-hmm. I agree. This kid is a real, like, you know, store brand Jenny Lewis type. She's got same red hair, looks similar in the face, although she also has the look that her permanent teeth just came in like 3 hours ago. So they're still like looking a tiny bit too big for her mouth, you know? Anyway, if the voice of Aunt Terry sounded familiar, it's because you're in the Patreon and recently heard us talking about Echo, in which Alexandra Paul played the wife of one of its Jax Wagner. Here she is in a very thankless role. So she tucks Sarah in and then closes the door and hisses at Ryan that it's not good for Sarah to see him so briefly. Ryan complains that Terry should let him see her longer then, but she crabs that Sarah needs stability. Clip three.
And I've got to be her father and her mother, too.
That's right, Terry. Your sister is dead.
And whose choice was that?
She's my daughter. You can't keep her from me.
I'm still her legal guardian, Ryan. By court order, you get her 3 weeks a year. Seeing you any more than that is hard on all of us.
I mean, he's so boring. Is it really hard or
exactly.
Is it just kind of grayish?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's hard on me as well, but he like barely makes an impact. I mean, truly, we have not learned his real name. That should tell you how unimportant he is. Anyway.
No. Give Charles Nelson Reilly a break.
Give Ruth Bader Ginsburg a break. The next night at the Rock and Roll Club, Megan and Michael talk past each other about the latest news in their lives. Ryan is going to come straight off his plane to meet Megan at their wedding church, and Dr. Shulman is planning to close the trauma center at the hospital. More of her in the A-plot. Megan is concerned about the workers who are going to get screwed, like the nurses who could use a doctor to speak up for them, like maybe Michael, because he's great at rescuing underdogs like Megan herself. And also there was that clinic he opened last year for a second. Michael has a lot to think about as he heads out for evening rounds he's going to do after having had at least one cocktail. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
As he leaves, he runs into Lexi, who says it's good that Michael's positioning himself to scoop Megan up when Ryan comes back and dumps her. Clip four.
Dumps her? He's coming back to marry her, you moron.
So maybe they're not the ideal couple, but it's better than their other options.
I'm going to miss this man so much. I mean, the fact that he's doing anything at all noteworthy at the dregs of this show, I mean, he's just the best.
Yeah. And that he's like marooned in some weird subplot with her now is mm-hmm. like, no.
Mm-mm.
But he's making it work and she's there. So.
Yes. Someone had the idea of like, well, she's terrible, so put her opposite Calabro because at least he can find something to do. And he does.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. I'm sure that's absolutely what happened.
Yeah. Lexi joins Megan and they chat about Ryan. Megan thanks Lexi for all of her emotional support and for pushing Megan to propose to him. Not that she did, which no one actually says in this scene.
Yeah.
She didn't.
Like, you dredged the show Bible for Michael's stupid 2.5-episode clinic, but you don't remember that happened, like, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm. Megan just doesn't know how to repay Lexi, who coos that one day she will. And then we're at the church, where Ryan's remembering the night that Sarah's mother horribly died in a car crash when Megan chirps in. When she can obviously tell that something's up with him, he says that marriages have to start with honesty and there are things about him she doesn't know, like he hurts people. He gets engaged, then he can't handle it. Unconcerned, Megan says cold feet happen to everyone, but Ryan says it's more twisted than that. And then blurts that he slept with Lexi in Mexico, and whenever Megan needs him most, he's going to push her away, and she slaps him and runs out. And then waits until the next day to show up at Lexi's condo and yell at her about having fucked Ryan. Lexi calmly says that someday Megan will thank her for helping Megan realize she and Ryan aren't right for each other. And so Megan quits on their friendship and her fake job, storming back out again. I guess her fake friendship, too, come to think of it.
Yeah.
That night, Ryan sits alone in his apartment, crying as he remembers some more about that fateful night, saving infant Sarah from the burning car, but not saving her mother. And then there's a knock at the door. It's Lexi there to yell at him for telling Megan about fucking in Mexico. Clip five.
All right, I can understand you having cold feet about the wedding, but now I've lost a friend. I've lost an employee.
Yeah, but who cares? Because see, now we get to be together.
Ryan. What is the matter with you?
Nothing you can't fix. Hey, do you remember this trick?
Stop it.
He rips her shirt open.
Off of me.
Come on. It's just like the powder room at Jane's wedding. You know what? And we can do it in the closet again. And maybe someplace new, like the back alley.
Get off me.
Even Megan did it better than that.
Backhand.
than you are anymore.
I haven't liked Lexi much, but that backhand was pretty great.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is completely baffling.
Yeah.
Like, this is, in fact, what she wanted. The unbelievable part isn't just that, though. It's mm-hmm. that he figured out that she tried to engineer this.
Yeah. Which also, like, when did he figure it out?
He's and also, smart. Please just allow it. Nobody cares. Get together, leave the show.
Right. Quickly. So then Amanda's on her way out to work the next morning when Megan materializes at her door saying she quit her fake job and broke up with Ryan. So could Kyle please go get all of the things on this list that she has made out of Ryan's apartment? Kyle is astonished, but Megan says he came back from New York a totally different person. Amanda offers Megan another fake job working for her, but Megan doesn't want to work with Ryan. And when Megan leaves and Kyle approvingly asks if Amanda's trying to matchmake them, Amanda just shrugs that she's taking advantage of Lexi's misfortune, and Kyle tensely says he should have known business always comes first, and they have a long, uncomfortable look, and unfortunately, there's going to be more of this in the A-plot, too. Snooze. That night, Michael joins Megan at the rock and roll club and tries to buy her a drink, but she's going home. I don't know why she would come out at all to the bar owned by the brother of the guy she just acrimoniously dumped anyway.
And since you're already there and you already had a drink, why not get it on with Michael since he's offering, which he is, always.
Yeah, for real. He has no follow-up questions about her situation, but then he doesn't need any because Lexi plops down next to him to catch him up. Michael is excited to be there in Megan's time of need, but Lexi tells him about her whole scheme to break them up and says the time is not right for her and Michael to swoop in because Megan and Ryan are still in love. Michael says Megan hasn't turned against him, so he could still get something going. And instead of saying, that sounds like a good idea, Lexi tries to get Michael to agree to a pact to keep Ryan and Megan apart. Let him try to fuck her! That would do it!
Yes.
Why is this so complicated? I truly don't get it, but whatever. Michael's not on board.
No.
And then Sarah calls Ryan to whine that she is lonely for him. He wishes he could hold her right now. She has just asked if he can come to see her soon when Terry creeps up behind her and sends her to her room, grabbing the phone. And then when Sarah's gone, Terry bitches Ryan out and warns him for the very last time to stop calling. Like, this is a payphone. Obviously, Sarah called him, which is what he says, minus, you know, my attitude, kind of. And also, clip six.
Callie would never have wanted you to keep her from me like this.
How dare you even utter my sister's name after what you did to her? You don't have an answer for that, do you?
It's not the phone's fault. Also, like, we need more context on this accident. Like, was it his fault, for starters?
Yeah. Also, the flashbacks. Did we see flashbacks this week?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in all of them, the wife is telling him to get the kid out first.
Right.
He gets the kid out, the car blows up. Mm-hmm. Standard TV shit.
Yeah.
Read the script. Read the rest of the script. Terry? Carrie?
Terry.
Alexander Paul? Philip Seymour Hoffman? I don't know what the fuck's going on. I don't care. Next!
From there, they all cross over into the A-plot, so we'll see more of them anon. On to said A-plot. Amanda takes a break from dodging Kyle to come through for Eve, who in turn comes through for Peter. At what is apparently bedtime, Amanda announces that she has to go back to the office. Kyle wraps his arms around her and suggests that she come out to the house site for lunch tomorrow. She says it'll have to be a short one. She's very busy and important. And in the courtyard, Amanda runs into Michael, who saw the for sale sign outside and says she can't sell the building without notifying the tenants. And she has just dismissed his many complaints when Eve comes out of her place and says if Amanda's selling it just to get away from her, Eve will just move. And they briefly reset their plot. Yes, Amanda is still mad about, you know, her pregnancy loss. And Amanda's continuing on her way when a couple of cops show up to bring Eve in for questioning in Jackie's case. And as they manhandle her out with them, Eve yells back to Amanda to tell Peter what is happening. It's really kind of a lot considering, as far as they know at this point, other than Eve also being on parole, like, she's just a witness, you know?
Yeah, but also her PO was like, she better start showing up to every single appointment early or I'm going to violate her. So,
right.
But they don't make that the reason that they're like being so manhandly with her.
Right. Yeah. And then after the commercials and the credits, a raging Peter is yelling at the detective about Eve being held there while the detective's like, we're done and she can leave. But she does have a hearing at the parole board the next day and she might have to go back to prison directly from it to finish her sentence. Oh, no, please, I guess.
Please, Lord, please.
Yes, exactly. And there's a very artsy, dumb crossfade from like Peter's reflection in the glass to Eve. And it's like too much. No one cares about these two. Like, I don't know how many times I have to tell you. We're over it. Under cloudy skies at the beach, Kyle is setting up a lunch table with a checked tablecloth and everything when Amanda calls looking for Ryan, who we've already talked about. With him MIA, Amanda claims they are swamped at the office, so she's not going to be able to make it to see Kyle for lunch, and Kyle pretends to understand. And after she hangs up, Jane and Amanda discuss how work-life balance and how Amanda's having a hard time cutting down her workload the way Kyle wants her to.
How does Rob Estes look so bad?
Yeah.
Like, this is I understood what they were maybe going for with when he was in his addiction storyline, but now that they've apparently forgotten that, like, there's absolutely no reason for him to have a highlightless, like, it looks like someone spray painted his hair with, like, Couvre or whatever the fuck it is that they used to advertise on TV late at night. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have enough makeup on. Like, this is, again, a good-looking guy, but he looks kind of yellow. Mm. What's the idea? What are we doing?
Yeah. Dunno.
Yeah.
And especially since we're supposed to, I think we're supposed to think he is right about the work-life balance thing. And like,
yeah,
he's, yes, exactly. Jerk-off motion about that. But yes, he's like, he's outside working with his hands. He's in the sun. He's doing everything right. He's working for their future. And she's stuck inside in her office. Boo. Woman, have job. No. So I don't know why they're not making him look like healthy and glowing if he's supposed to be on the right side of this argument. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to Jane Amanda. Amanda says she and Kyle will work through it like they always do, as if their marriage wasn't basically over like 1.5 episodes ago, but sure. And back at the building site, Kyle puts his picnic away. And in case we weren't sure how sad it is, we have to watch him do this in slow motion.
Oh my God.
Like, take that, basket. Like, what is happening? Anyway.
Yeah, he's like hurling a shrimp into it. Like, okay, you know. I know it's not Rob Estes' fault, any of this, but it just is so goofy.
Yeah, well,
at least he's not doing the hand-to-mouth acting as much this episode, which, yay.
So then we crossfade from that to the rock and roll club where our guest this week is Chris Isaak. Like, Hanson was in the Christmas episode. They were pretty big in their day. I think this is the most famous person we have seen at the club so far. Right?
Well, we would think that, but we also were like, Swirl 360? That's not a thing. And then like the 360 Hive let us know on the Discord, which, by the way, thank you for doing that. Yes. I loved learning that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know jazz. So when it was a jazz club.
That's true.
There were some people that I think were probably king and queen shit of Jazz Mountain, but we didn't know because we don't listen to jazz.
That's true. Anyway, Chris's on-the-nose song selection repeats, "Don't get so down on yourself," as the chorus, as though directly to Kyle, so it's too bad Kyle isn't there to hear it. And back home later, Amanda angrily fields a call from a developer who wants to buy the complex and tear it down, saying it's practically a historic landmark. And when she has furiously hung up, Kyle comments that it doesn't sound like she wants to sell. But she says she's just waiting for the right buyer. There's more to consider than money. Pfft, that's a first for Amanda, but all right. Like, anyway, he makes her admit that, yes, there are things she's going to miss when they leave this place, like the original molding and some of the people, like Megan.
The original molding?
I know.
trick. That was a motel. Come on.
Kyle's like, aren't you going to miss Eve? And she's like, nope. Peter told Kyle about the possibility that Eve will go back to prison. Amanda says that isn't her fault. Kyle says that if she forgave him, she has to forgive Eve. But Amanda stomps out without agreeing. Over to Eve and Peter. The latter is tense about Dr. Shulman. Eve tries to take his mind off things sexfully, but he shrugs her off, which is curious considering this might be their last chance for a while. But anyway, he's pissy. Clip 7.
You know, if you would have taken my concerns a little more seriously, our life might not be such a train wreck.
What are you talking about, train wreck? Are you still upset about my arrest because my lawyer said that
Forget about what your lawyer said. I think the board is going to revoke your parole.
But you said that...
Forget what I said, too. I tried. But the bottom line here is... they don't like your attitude.
My attitude?
Yeah. They think they let you out too soon. And they think you belong back in prison.
But you're a doctor. You can pay for lawyers and judges and my freedom, damn it, just like Amanda's mother did 15 years ago. I live on this side of the tracks now. Doctors' wives don't go to jail.
Sorry.
What a childlike way of like, I'm a doctor's wife. You can buy me anything, including judges. Like, wow. Mm-hmm. It's either very cynical and dark, or you were dropped on your head while incarcerated.
Yeah.
I guess it could be a little of both.
Or you just never grew out of your headspace when you were incarcerated in the first place at age 16. You still are thinking that things work like that, or your impression of what happened at the time based on your limited understanding.
Mm.
Yeah.
But also the, are you still mad about my arrest? Like, it wasn't a parking ticket.
And then it's the next day. We're at the parole board hearing. Peter, for some reason, seated with Eve, no lawyer in sight. And Peter, for some reason, is being questioned about why maps that Eve bought were found on Jackie's boat, making her an evident flight risk. Amanda enters in the middle of this and joins Kyle at the back of the room. And even though the question was addressed to Peter, Eve says that she was helping an old friend. And the lead guy asks, is there anyone present who can give him a reason not to jail Eve? Clip 8.
I can give you one. No. Eve works for me as an entertainment consultant at my agency, Amanda Woodward Advertising.
And you will vouch for her?
I've known Eve for more than half my life. And she is one of the most moral, responsible people I know. She works hard, and she holds us all to a higher standard. I depend on her to help keep me honest. It would be a terrible hardship for me if I lost her.
Thank you, Ms. Woodward. We'll now take a brief recess.
Amanda. Thank you.
Just helping out an old friend going through a hard time.
And if I end up going back to prison, I'll know that you forgave me.
Now you have to forgive me for being so obstinate.
You got it.
Now that you're no longer pregnant.
Yeah.
You're obstinate. Also, don't forgive her. She sucks. Send her back.
Yes.
She's not done. She's not done cooking.
Sadly, parole board, or at least a majority of same, votes that she is free to go. Few, I guess, although I would like to know which non-speaking person voted against her. We don't find that out.
Is it Superintendent Eppard really need to make it to this full panel of the parole board?
And then we're at the beach house by night. It is raining too hard for Kyle to work on Jane's stairs for the moment. This is the longest, shortest project that's ever been, by the way. Like, it's 3 stairs maximum. Why are you here all the time? Anyway, he's heading out, but Jane has a date on the way and her sauce tastes awful. And so Kyle, the chef, remember, offers to help. After a taste, recommends some spice additions. Jane does not seem very optimistic about her date, which is with a guy that she met at a client meeting. She doesn't think it ever really works to mix business in her social life. And right on cue, the guy calls to reschedule because there's been a mudslide on the PCH. Kyle realizes that means he won't be able to get home either. And no sooner is he taken the phone from Jane to tell Amanda than the power goes out. So he lights the tapers on the table. And when Jane invites him to stay and eat, he says he's not dressed for dinner. Like, this isn't Downton Abbey and there's a blackout. Like, what? But regardless, Jane says he looks fine, and Kyle's like, Over to the rock and roll club, where Amanda and Eve are having martinis, Eve very belatedly asking what being Amanda's entertainment consultant entails. Amanda airily says she'll think of something later, and then the bartender relays Kyle's message about being stuck at the beach. And then Peter joins them. Someone wants to buy his father's property in Texas, but Peter doesn't want to deal with it if it means going back again, which, like, okay, what was the plan for this property then? Like, you would just keep it for no reason? Not explained.
Yeah. Or, like, get a management company? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it was the 90s, but, like, this was still possible to do remotely.
Sure. No? Anyway, Eve offers to go back with him, saying it'll only take a day. It will. But Peter... Wow. Doesn't think he can risk leaving the hospital for that long, especially not if that means putting Michael in charge in his absence. So Eve tries to entice him by calling it a 24-hour getaway to the romantic dirt patch, and Peter lets himself be convinced. And when we see them next, they are back in good old Twitty, Texas, talking about the property with a guy named Bob, when Michael calls Peter's cell and tells him he has to get back to the hospital because Dr. Shulman set up a meeting to replace Peter immediately, and it is crucial to the practice, LOL, remember the practice, that one of them be chief of staff. And Peter's like, I can't get back. And Michael's like, you have to. And Peter's like, okay, and tells Eve he has to go right now. Eve says she'll just drop him at the airport and finalize the sale herself. Peter doesn't want her haggling over money if it means delaying unloading the land right in front of Bob, by the way. So RIP your leverage in this deal.
Yeah, right? Jesus.
Like, I know he's a doctor and this isn't his area of expertise, but he's also a property owner. Like, he has owned a house in the past and still owns the condo, I think, actually, that Lexi lives in.
Yeah.
Anyway. Back in L.A., Kyle returns home from his sleepover at Jane's in time for Amanda to dismiss her property buyer who insulted her with a lowball offer. She snits about Kyle having fun at the beach, but Kyle misses her sarcasm and says he did, working with his hands all day and listening to the waves all night. And then, you know, we're supposed to think you can spontaneously leave bumfuck Texas and get back to Los Angeles the same afternoon, but apparently that is what has happened. Peter crashes Dr. Shulman's meeting 10 minutes in. She would like to know why so much has gone wrong on his watch. And Peter's like what? And then she just lists things from the past five episodes, ending on putting his murderer wife on the board of a foundation that controls hundreds of thousands of dollars, which, you know, she wasn't convicted of financial crimes, just saying. But Peter threatens to sue Dr. Shulman for libel, which that isn't, but because he means slander and also because it's factually accurate, she was convicted of murder. But still, he yells at Dr. Shulman to save it for her memoirs because he quits, and Michael tries to stop him to no avail. And then we're at the goddamn halfway house cafe, which we've already seen in minimum five previous episodes of the show, if not many more.
Minimum. I would put it closer to a dozen.
Okay. I guess it got put on a truck and driven to fucking Texas because Eve is inside sitting at the counter between two would-be property buyers.
Drinking out of their branded mugs, which are very cute.
Yes.
So maybe they sold out to Big Mug and they were like, well, if you want this sweet mug money, you have to put the thing on a wide, low, like oversized flatbed and drive it to wherever they are.
Yeah.
Round Rock.
Anyway.
Dusty hole.
Mr. Stone wants to turn the property into ranch land and he hands Eve a personal check. But Eve has looked at comps and she knows that it's worth $70,000. But to be neighborly, she'll settle for $60,000. And Bob, on her other side, is like, hey, but doesn't count her. And so they'll sign the papers the next day. And Eve looks smug as hell until she glances outside and sees Bob and Mr. Stone talking to a shadowy guy in a truck and wonders if they haven't been entirely honest with her because the guy's truck says he's from Benedict Geological Surveyors. And I guess Eve did enough high school to know what that probably means, but they still cut back to Eve moving her lips as she reads the door label. Like, come on, guys. Like, seriously. But anyway.
Yeah.
That night, Kyle goes to Amanda's office to set up a little immersive beach experience with a slide projector and a CD of soothing ocean sounds. She thanks him for saving her from herself. He also got her a necklace with a very tacky heart pendant, which he says is his heart. So whenever she feels lost or lonely, she can touch it and know that he is with her. Barf. And then as he's putting it on her, he like whispers creepily that whenever he sees it on her, he'll know she's okay. So I guess she's going to be losing it or giving it away pretty soon. Otherwise, I don't know why we had to endure that. But
yeah.
For now, she is horny, and they make out on the conference table with the ocean scene projected across them. And again, another artsy choice that, like, does not land at all.
No. Also, I would have preferred a focus pull to a large bottle of hand sanitizer in the foreground. Do we receive this? No. How does anyone at this company not have, like, I don't know, gonorrhea of the hand? It's terrible. No judgments, gonorrhea at the hand sufferers.
Absolutely.
It's not your fault.
Nope.
It's a workplace issue.
That's right. So then it's the next day. Eve bursts into Peter's office after apparently snorting the entire Griselda truckload of cocaine. Flip nine.
Hey, what are you, redecorating?
Oh, I'm breaking camp. I resigned yesterday.
You quit? Wow, that's nice.
Nice. Nice. I've been butting heads with Shulman, going crazy here. How did it go with the land sale?
Well, you know, I decided not to sell the land. I decided to lease it instead.
You leased it? I told you I wanted to get rid of that place.
I know, but I cut a better deal with Torn Doyle. Here, check this out.
$5 million?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a joke?
Oh, we're rich, Peter, we're rich. I found the buyer's company name in the phone book. Turns out they're an oil survey firm. They already checked out your property. We are sitting on black gold, baby. I gave Torn Doyle a 30-year lease. This is just the first check.
First check?
First check.
You mean there's more?
There's more.
There's more of these?
Yeah.
That's a very good thing.
Yeah.
That's a very, very good thing. Very good thing.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
So first of all, Torrend Oil, like Torrend Entertainment, which was the Spelling Entertainment subdivision that was the rights holder for 90210 for the first two seasons, because it was named after Tori and Randy.
And Randy.
Mm-hmm. So that's cute. Mm-hmm. Less cute, Peter then wants to fuck on the check. But just, you know, yeah. People celebrate in their own ways, and I don't judge, I guess. At the office the next day, Amanda's evidently in the middle of several different crises when Kyle shows up to take her to lunch. Unfortunately, she's too swamped to leave right now, and Kyle decides to make it a sign of things to come for them. Clip 10.
You're never going to be able to pull away from the office, are you?
No. Not ever. You take me, take the whole package.
Well, it's not a bad package.
We've been through worse than this. Get through this somehow.
Why?
Mm-mm.
He's not good at life.
Mm-mm. No.
Send him back to Boston, COD, and get back together with Peter. Let's do a show. Come on.
Yes. That night at Kyle's, Peter tells Eve about his father's resentment of Peter after his mother's death. This money doesn't erase all that, but it helps. Peter thinks they should use it to take the year off and travel, and Eve is excited at that prospect, but clip 11.
Yeah, I'm going to play the top 100 golf courses in the world.
You can hear Jack Wagner's penis hardening during that line. Absolutely insisted on that in the script.
Mm-hmm.
Her face, she's just like,
oh, ew. It's so funny.
It's actually pretty good.
It is. Like, you're like, ask if you have to go or if it's just like, I'll see you when you're done. Like,
yeah.
100 golf courses, 100 days. Bye-bye. Anyway.
Nope.
Then Dr. V is there to congratulate Peter. He adds that there's a group of doctors and nurses organizing a protest against all of the rollbacks at the hospital. Peter says it's not his problem anymore, and he and Eve are going to travel. And Dr. V says, clip 12.
You love the people at the hospital, and you love being a doctor. And look at all those lottery winners who walked away from their lives. All the money went down the drain, and they turned into empty shells.
Well, my shell's never going to be empty.
No, Peter. Just listen to what he's saying. I mean, you might be lost without your patients, without your responsibilities. I mean, what does the good life mean to you?
That's a good question.
I take his point, but, like, it's not really like a lottery where you just get the money and then it's gone. Like, the whole thing that we just heard is it's a lease, so they're going to keep getting money all the time. You know? Uh-huh. Like, they probably can just do whatever they want, but I think we all see where this is going.
Or just make your own golf course, play it, and then have them remake it.
Yeah.
You could stay home.
True. Over to the rock and roll club where poor Chris Isaac is playing his third and final number, Something About This Time. And Megan is watching Michael wrap up a meeting with some hospital protest organizers. And it looks like Michael's social conscience is making Megan horny as hell. She is there on Michael's invitation as part of his good work. He knew that she was sad about Ryan, and he doesn't think that she should let him get her down. Michael adds that he never got over her. They just had bad timing. And Lexi watches as Megan incredulously asks if Michael is losing her heartbreak to get her into bed. But he says he just wants to be there for her. But there's no chance. Megan's never going to get over Ryan. Which, like, him? Really?
Really? John James Audubon?
Oliver Wendell Holmes?
Junior?
Michael's basically like him, but he, you know, just wants one more try. But Megan wants to go and has to shove Michael out of the booth to do it. And then Lexi sidles up smugly and Michael pouts that she wins. They can do her scheme together, whatever it is. I'm not quite sure at this stage. And then Peter is walking out the last box of stuff from his office at the hospital as the staff rally outside, and Dr. Shulman acts like the cartoon villain she is, yelling at them to get to their shifts or face the consequences. This devolves into Peter and Dr. Shulman yelling at each other through the crowd, and Peter ultimately deciding to take his resignation letter out of Dr. Shulman's hand because she is carrying it for some reason. And he tears it up because he's going to stay and fight for his colleagues and for their patients. And then Kyle is finding Ryan at their basketball court, drinking and crying. Clip 13.
What is it with us McBrides? First sign of trouble, we get faced when we try to play basketball.
A good line, well delivered. Quite redemptive for Rob Estes, I would say.
You know, it's been a minute since I've heard faced used that way. I enjoyed it.
Oh, so good.
Kyle knows the breakups are hard, but he's sure that Ryan and Megan will work things out. But Ryan tells Kyle he doesn't know anything and launches into the whole story. Ryan was 18. Kyle had gone to the Marines and Ryan and Mac weren't speaking. And Ryan met a girl, fell in love, got married. And it's at this point that Kyle's like, what? Because were they not speaking? But anyway, they had Sarah. Everything was great until he was driving and hit a deer. Oh, yeah, that's right. We did hear what happened. This episode was just so long and stupid that I forgot. It wasn't really his fault. It was the deer's fault. Anyway, he hit a deer and then a tree, and he got out, but the car was on fire. And so we watch as Ryan narrates. Callie was trapped, and she told Ryan to save the baby. And while he and his terrible wig, which you can see in the visual aids, were holding the baby a few yards away, the car blew up. And after a nasty court fight that Kyle also totally missed, apparently Sarah ended up living in New York with her aunt. Kyle blames himself because he could have gotten Callie out first because the flames didn't get to the backseat until later, he says. But Kyle says that Ryan couldn't have known that. And from what we saw, that's definitely not what happened at all. Like,
no.
He got the baby out just before the car blew up. Like, what? But anyway.
Yeah.
Terry blames Kyle for causing Callie's death, and Ryan never loved anyone as much as he loved Callie until Megan. So tough luck for the three other women he was engaged to at various points. Yikes. But he hasn't told Megan any of this, and he couldn't tell Sarah about Megan either. And Kyle, ignorantly confident, declares that Sarah would get it if she met Megan. Like, you don't know her at all.
No.
You cannot say that, but Ryan promised Sarah that he would never remarry. He made the wrong choice and deprived his daughter of a mother. And that's the end. Like, we don't care. This is not an episode-ending character. Not at all. No. Yeah. No.
And none of this is realistic, but it's like, all right, if this is endgame, then I will allow it. But Jesus, like,
yeah,
like, not that we care, but if we did, what?
Yes. Anyway. That's the end. So let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Dr. Visconti? He's still getting lines for some reason? Bless his heart.
Yes. Yeah. I'll give it to Megan for having enough self-respect to, like, tell everyone who's wronging her to fuck off.
Yeah, she was my honorable mention, so my runner-up. So, yeah, good All call. Right.
Least valuable player.
Golf.
Oh, golf is so strong. I'm going to say Terry for being such a bitch, but yeah, golf. Yes.
Next time on Again with This Dawson's Creek edition, speaking of the Halfway House Cafe, it's Hurricane Chris. JK, not him. An actual hurricane is coming to town to fling a bunch of emotional parallel detritus all around Capeside. But does the episode blow?
Yeah.
Light a candle for your retinas before you visit our visual aids. You'll find those for this and every other episode of the podcast at againwiththispodcast.com. We are on Blue Sky at Again With This, on Instagram at Again With This Podcast, and you can call or text us 210-920-4699. Let us hear from you. I'm surprisingly portable roadside restaurant Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Top 100 Golf Course star Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tar Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, came back to marry her, you morons. Talk to you next time.
Oh, that's a crock.
Sure is.